Last time we ended up talking about respiration, and we said that we were going to talk about four different chemical reactions that occurred in respiration. We talked about two of them. We talked about glycolysis and the acetyl-CoA reaction. We also said that we're going to talk about the citric acid cycle and then the electron transport chain. And we said in each of these reactions, what you should know is where it occurs, what goes in, what comes out, how much ATP is produced directly, how many other high energy intermediates are produced, such as NADH and FADH, and how many CO2 are produced, which is the waste product of respiration. We talked about glycolysis. We said that it occurred in the cytosol. So it occurs outside of the mitochondria, and it's the only reaction that does occur outside of the mitochondria itself. What goes in is a glucose, which has 6 carbon, and that's going to be important as we kind of move through this process. Glucose in this process is broken down into 2 molecules that are called pyruvate, and each of those pyruvates are 3 carbon. Okay, so basically we split that 6 carbon glucose molecule into 2 3 carbon pyruvates. In the process, 4 ATP are produced, but it takes us 2 to get the process going, so 2 net ATP are produced. 2 NADH are produced, and 0 FADH and 0 CO2. The acetyl-CoA reaction occurs in the matrix of the mitochondrion, okay? And we said that what goes in is the 2 pyruvate that are 3 carbon each that we produced in glycolysis. So the acetyl-CoA reaction needs to run twice, once for each of the pyruvate. What comes out are 2 acetyl-CoA molecules, which are 2 carbon each. So in other words, we're taking these 3 carbon pyruvate molecules, we're breaking the carbon off, and that leaves us with a 2 carbon acetyl-CoA molecule. Okay. In the process, no ATP are produced directly. 2 NADH are produced, 0 FADH, and 2 CO2. Now the reason why 2 CO2 are produced, if you remember, we broke a carbon off from each of these pyruvate, and so that's waste carbon and needs to be expelled by the body, and it's done so in the gaseous form of CO2. Okay? Any questions? We could also use this more graphical representation, I guess you could say, here on the overhead projector. Kind of the same thing that we've been talking about on this table I've been putting on the board. But glycolysis here, some ATP is produced directly, actually 4 minus 2 or 2 net ATP. Some high energy intermediate, which is 2 NADH, is produced in glycolysis. In the acetyl-CoA reaction, we produce 2 NADH here, high energy intermediates, 2 CO2. So the next process in respiration is the citric acid cycle. Okay, and the citric acid cycle is going to occur again in the matrix of the mitochondria. Right, and what actually goes in are these 2 acetyl-CoA molecules. So how many times are we going to have to run the citric acid cycle per glucose?
Twice.
Twice, right? Okay, so 1 for each glucose. Now this is a true cycle, again, kind of like the C3 cycle in photosynthesis, okay? And so what we start out with is we start out with a 4 carbon molecule called OAA. You don't need to remember the actual name. It stands for oxaloacetic acid. Okay, we add that to a 2 carbon acetyl-CoA molecule, and that gives us a 6 carbon
molecule called citric acid. Therefore, the name
is the citric acid cycle. Okay.
What's now, the four carbon that you're adding to it?
What's that?
That four carbon.
It actually comes from the cycle here. Okay. So it comes from the cycle. This cycle is also sometimes called the Krebs cycle. You might have heard it called the Krebs cycle before. Okay. And what's actually going to come out of this process is a four-carbon OAA molecule. Okay. Now, let me just talk a little bit about the cycle and kind of what's happening here. All right. So basically, we start out in this in the Krebs cycle or in the citric acid cycle with a four-carbon molecule called OAA, or oxaloacetic acid. Okay. We add a two-carbon molecule called acetyl-CoA. And where did we get these acetyl-CoA molecules again from? From the acetyl-CoA reaction. Okay. So the two-carbon plus the four-carbon makes a six-carbon molecule called citric acid. Okay. Now we go through this process, and what we end up with at the end of the process is a four-carbon OAA molecule again. And what happens to that four-carbon OAA molecule? Bonds to a two-carbon acetyl-CoA molecule, making a six-carbon citric acid. Go through the process, end up with a four-carbon OAA molecule again. Does that make sense to everybody? So we have to run this process twice per glucose molecule because there are two acetyl-CoA molecules, right? Okay. Now in this process, then, what we're doing is we're basically breaking down that two-carbon acetyl-CoA molecule completely. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody? So if you look here in the process, there's going to be a CO2 given off here in the process and one here. And so there are two CO2 that are given off per cycle. So how many CO2 are given off per glucose? Four, right? Because we have to run this process twice, right? In addition, some ATP is produced. There's one molecule of ATP that's produced per cycle. Again, we have to run this cycle twice. So there's a total of two ATP that are produced. Okay. Also notice that there's some high energy intermediate that's produced. There's one, two, three NADH that are produced per cycle. Okay. So that gives us a total of six NADH per glucose, correct? Okay. And notice there's another high energy intermediate that's produced here called FADH. FADH is, again, another high energy intermediate. We'll talk about how it differs from NADH here in just a minute. But there are two that are produced per glucose because there's one FADH that's produced per cycle. Okay? Any questions about that? So in the citric acid cycle, two ATP are produced directly from this cycle. Six NADH are produced, two FADH, and four CO2. Okay. Any questions? Yeah.
How do you know for sure how many times it has to go through the cycle?
Okay. When I asked how many times does it have to go through the cycle per glucose, remember that per glucose, we started out with a six-carbon molecule. Okay. We broke it down into two three-carbon molecules in the citric acid or in the acetyl-CoA reaction. We broke those two three-carbon molecules into two two-carbon molecules. So we need to run it once for each of these acetyl-CoA molecules. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Per glucose. Now this process can occur indefinitely as long as the organism is alive. But the it only occurs twice per glucose molecule. Does that make sense?
Kind of, yeah.
Or does it make sense?
So, well, is it like what you start out with, like the...
Yeah, it depends on what you start out with, but you could say, for example, you could have 10 glucose molecules. If you had 10 glucose molecules, you go through the citric acid cycle 20 times.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so twice for each glucose molecule. Okay. Okay, so now here's the real interesting thing. If you remember back when we were talking about word definitions, we had a word definition for respiration. We said that respiration was the breaking of chemical bonds to produce useful energy, namely ATP, right? Okay. Now look what we've done through these three chemical reactions. We started out with a 6-carbon glucose molecule. Okay. And notice how many CO2 have been given off in these three processes. There are 6 CO2 that are given off. So what have we done with this glucose molecule in the process of respiration?
Taken away the carbon.
Okay, we've taken away the carbons, or we've completely dismantled it, if you think about it, right? Remember our word definition, breaking chemical bonds. So we take the glucose, we break it completely apart. So break each of the carbons apart, and we've harvested a whole bunch of energy. So far, we've harvested 4 net ATP, 10 net NADH, and 2 FADH, as far as energy is concerned. Okay. Any questions about that? Okay, so in the process of respiration, we're breaking chemical bonds and producing useful energy up here. All right. So in this case, we've completely broken down glucose, which is a 6-carbon molecule, and each of those carbons in the glucose has been given off as a carbon dioxide. Okay? Any questions about that? All right. Now, the last, actually, look, before we go into this next process, let me just show you here again on this kind of a graphical representation. In the citric acid cycle, notice that there's a line going directly to ATP. There would be 2 ATP produced per glucose, right? Going to CO2, should be 4 CO2 that are produced. Notice there's a line going over here to the high energy intermediate box. And the high energy intermediates in this case, there's 6 NADH and 2 FADH that go into this high energy intermediate box. Okay. Any questions about that? So that kind of covers the citric acid cycle. The last reaction that we want to talk about is the electron transport chain. Okay. The electron transport chain occurs across the inner membrane of the mitochondrion. So if you remember, if we drew a mitochondrion, it has an outer membrane, highly folded inner membrane. The electron transport chain occurs across this membrane here, the inner membrane of the mitochondria. Okay, so we're going to put inner membrane of the mitochondria. All right, that's where it occurs. Now, this process that's going to occur across the inner membrane of the mitochondria is kind of similar to the light-dependent reaction in photosynthesis. Remember, in the light-dependent reaction of photosynthesis, light hit the membrane. Hydrogen ions were moved against their concentration gradient, and then those hydrogen ions, as they went across gated protein channels, they were able to produce ATP and NADPH, right? Okay. Very similar process occurs here. What happens is NADH, as it comes in contact with this membrane, it starts to release its energy, and it has enough energy to move 6 hydrogen ions against their concentration gradient across the plasma membrane. Okay, so again, if we have a plasma membrane here, if NADH comes in contact with that membrane, it has enough energy to move 2 hydrogen ions at a time, and it does that once, twice, and 3 times. So it's able to move 6 hydrogen ions across the plasma membrane against our concentration gradient. Any questions about that? Now, what if we have a gated protein channel here with an enzyme? Okay. If we open that gate up, what's going to happen to these hydrogen ions? They're going to diffuse across, right? Do they have any energy to be released again? They do. Remember, we used the example of a dam, so it's kind of like putting water behind a dam. Okay. And what happens is for every 2 hydrogen ions that cross this plasma membrane, there's enough energy to produce 1 ATP out of an ADP molecule. So how many ATP can be made for every NADH? So we have
three.
Okay, now why three? Okay, NADH has enough energy to move six hydrogen ions across the plasma membrane. For every two hydrogen ions that cross through this gated protein channel, you get one ATP, right? So there's one ATP there, and one there. Okay? Any questions? Yeah.
You're saying that when the NADH comes in contact, it can move the two hydrogen ions. It moves them, just move them across, and then it comes back across, and it moves them again?
Yeah, it basically has energy to move them across in pairs. So it's releasing energy. It's almost like, not a great analogy, but kind of a similar analogy, is when you burn 1 gallon of gas, it has enough energy to make your piston stroke six times. Well, actually, it does more than that. But does that kind of make sense?
Okay.
So it has enough energy to move those hydrogen ions across. So it's kind of like, in a lot of ways, it's like your engine. It converts energy that's in the NADH into moving hydrogen ions across the plasma membrane to create potential energy.
I guess what I'm asking is, when it comes in contact, does it move three groups of two? Or does it move one group of two, three times?
It moves three groups of two. Any questions? Any other questions about NADH? Now, FADH does not have as much energy as NADH. FADH only has enough energy to move two sets of two hydrogen ions across the plasma membrane. So if it can only move four hydrogen ions across the plasma membrane, how many ATP can be made from every FADH? Just two, right? Okay. So FADH would equal 2 ATP. Okay? Any questions about that? So for every NADH, we can produce 3 ATP via the electron transport chain. For every FADH, you can produce 2 ATP via the electron transport chain. Okay? So if we were to go up here and say, well, how much energy then is created from one molecule of glucose? How many ATP can be produced from one molecule of glucose? Well, we have 4 ATP that are produced directly, right? Through direct processes. Through indirect processes via the electron transport chain, we have 10 NADH. And each NADH can produce how many ATP?
3.
Okay, so times 3, that's a total of 30, right? Okay. How many ATP can be produced for every FADH?
2.
So that's 4. So we have 30 plus 4 plus 4, that's 38. Okay. So a total of 38 ATP can be produced for every glucose molecule. Okay? Any questions about that? Now, for those of you that read your book and remember what you read, it actually says something a little bit different, okay? It says there's a total of 36 ATP that are produced per glucose molecule. Now, 38 ATP is the ideal. In reality, some energy is lost, usually in the electron transport chain, and so on average, about 36 ATP are produced. So it's giving you an average in your book. But I want you to remember the ideal because it's easier to figure out than having to remember that generally two are lost somewhere along the line. Does that make sense? So just kind of work through the math and remember 38 ATP are produced in the process of respiration. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay. So let me just go through some hard questions that I could ask you on the test tomorrow, right? There's a test tomorrow. How many ATP, here's a really difficult question. This is about as hard as they'll come on the test, right? How many ATP are made per glucose from indirect processes during glycolysis in the process of respiration?
indirect are produced?
How many ATP are produced from indirect processes?
34.
In glycolysis.
Six.
Got the right answer, somebody said
six.
Six. Okay. Now, what did I say and what did you have to think through? By the way, if it were me, when I first got into the testing center, I would probably reproduce this or this table before I even started the test. Take some time and do that. That way you're not going to start second-guessing yourselves unless you have a lot better memory than I do. What I asked was per glucose, okay, in the process of glycolysis, so that's this reaction right here, how many ATP are produced via indirect processes in glycolysis, okay? So indirect is this way. Direct would be what? Right here, okay, going directly to ATP. So indirectly it has to go through what? The electron transport chain, right? So indirectly here, we're producing two NADH. Every NADH can produce how many ATP? Three, so two times three is six. Now also in the electron transport chain, oxygen is needed or else the electron transport chain won't run. And we're not going to talk about exactly why oxygen is needed. It's basically needed as what we call an electron acceptor, and water is produced, okay? So oxygen is needed for the electron transport chain, and that's going to be important here in a minute. All right. Any questions about that? Now here's another hard question, because we haven't asked anything like this before. How many ATP are made from direct and indirect processes in the acetyl-CoA reaction per pyruvate?
Three.
Okay. Why three? How many of you thought it was going to be three? A few of you? Most of you didn't. Okay, now what did I ask? I'm asking about this reaction right here, the acetyl-CoA reaction, okay? How many ATP are made from indirect processes, so what are you thinking then? The ones that go over here and go through the electron transport chain, right? Per pyruvate. Pyruvate is what? Half of a what? Glucose. Okay. So if I were to ask you any question per pyruvate, all you need to do is remember per glucose and then divide it by two. Does that make sense? Okay. So per pyruvate means just half of a glucose. Right. How many ATP are made from direct and indirect processes of the citric acid cycle per pyruvate? From direct and indirect processes per pyruvate in the citric acid cycle.
Okay, well, in the citric acid cycle, we have what? Two, let's just figure it out per glucose, right? Okay. So we have two ATP that are made directly, correct? We have six NADH, so six times three is 18. We have 2 FADH, 2 times 2 is 4, okay? So 18 and 4 is 22, plus 2 is 24, divided by 2 is 12, okay? Sean's looking like that, blowing away. All that math? Okay, let's go through it real quick. 2 ATP right here, okay? So you write 2 down, right? How many NADH? Six per glucose, right? So six times three is 18, okay? So 18 plus two is 20, okay? How many FADH? Two, and two times two is four, so 20 plus four is 24. I asked per pyruvate, so that would be 12, okay? Any questions about that? Any questions? Okay, so the important thing to understand is if you understand this stuff right here, what goes in, what comes out, you can answer any of the questions that I ask you, okay? Again, if I ask you per pyruvate, it's what? Half of a glucose, okay? Direct processes versus indirect processes, what does indirect mean?
has to go through the electron transport chain. So we're talking mainly about two molecules, NADH mostly, and FADH, right? Okay. This is direct here when it goes from the reaction directly to ATP. That's direct processes. Okay. Any questions about that? So if I ask, yeah, go ahead.
So you say direct is the one that goes over, and then indirect goes down.
Yeah, but indirect.
How do you know if it goes down or sideways?
Indirect goes through the electron transport chain.
Okay.
Okay. So basically, what we're talking about here are NADH and FADH. That's indirect. Okay. ATP that's produced directly in the reaction is just ATP. It doesn't need to be converted into ATP.
So what about going straight to the middle to the pyruvate? What is that?
Right here.
Is that just indirect too?
Yeah, actually, this is, there's no energy. That this is just showing, you start out with the glucose, you get 2-pyruvate out of it, so it's not showing any energy at all. Then in this reaction here, there's energy that's produced, right? Okay, it goes this way. At this reaction here, there's energy that's produced right there and right there. Okay. Any questions about it?
What other kind of questions would be on the test? Like, I mean, do you give us any kind of study guide or anything?
Just what we've gone over in class. Basically, anything we've gone over in class is fair game. For the
is it all multiple choice?
No. True, false, multiple choice, matching, and one page of short answer type questions. Should take you, by the way, before we move on, since you're asking questions about it, test should take you, I would reserve 2 hours for tomorrow to take it, and most of you should be able to finish it in an hour. But I would just leave myself 2 hours, so you have plenty of time.
Is it all day tomorrow?
Yeah, any time tomorrow. So it's open, what, 9 until 10:30? But if you don't, there gets to be a lot of people in there and you don't get in at the end of the day, that's your fault. So don't go at 10 o'clock and you don't think that you can do well on the test. Okay. We'll talk more about it here in just a minute. Okay, so we talked about glucose going through this process of respiration. Glucose is not the only substance that can go through respiration, and I don't expect you to know really a whole lot of what we're going to talk about except for one thing. Other substances can go through respiration as well. That's what I want you to know. For example, here, amino acids, they enter the process at different points. They don't enter it at the point of glycolysis. Okay. Fats enter at a different point, enter the process of respiration at different points. So really what I want you to realize is that glucose is just an example molecule. Okay? Other molecules can go through the process of respiration as well. Any questions about that? Now what we've been basically talking about here is what we call aerobic respiration. Okay? Aerobic means that it occurs with oxygen. Think about it this way. If you go to an aerobics class, you're using up lots of oxygen. Okay, that's actually what it means. You're actually getting your respiratory system to have more capacity. So we've been talking about aerobic respiration. What would happen if no oxygen were present? In other words, that is what we call an anaerobic process. In other words, what would happen if somebody strangled you? Okay, you wouldn't be able to get any oxygen in your body, right? And your cells would start to go into what we call anaerobic respiration. Okay? So what would happen in anaerobic respiration? Well, let's take a look at our let's take a look at our little chart here and ask the question, which of these chemical reactions need oxygen in order to run? Okay? Does the citric acid cycle need oxygen in order to run, and why?
Yes.
It does. Why? Yeah, you have to be able to get rid of carbon. Okay. So if we went into an anaerobic situation, we would no longer be able to run the citric acid cycle. Okay. What about the acetyl-CoA reaction? Does it need oxygen in order to run?
Yes.
So in an anaerobic situation, that's shut down. Okay. What about the electron transport chain? Would that be able to run in an anaerobic situation? No, we need oxygen here, so the electron transport chain shuts down. What about glycolysis? Could we run glycolysis without oxygen? Yeah, we could. Okay. So the only process that occurs in anaerobic respiration is glycolysis. Okay. So if you think about it, if somebody were to cut the air supply off to you, all right, the basic reason why you're going to die is not because of lack of oxygen exactly. It's kind of an indirect effect. But what you're going to die from is lack of energy. Because if you think about it, what is produced in glycolysis? How much energy? 2 net ATP and 2 NADH. Can those 2 NADH in an anaerobic situation even be converted into ATP? They can't, because the electron transport chain is shut down. Okay. So basically, the only energy that's produced is 2 ATP. And so that's why your cells start to die, because they don't have enough ATP to survive. Okay. So what happens in an anaerobic situation is this. Depends on whether or not the cell is a plant cell or an animal cell. Okay. Sometimes anaerobic respiration is also called fermentation. In an anaerobic respiration, what happens is 2 ATP, net ATP, are produced. Okay. So, and 2 NADH are produced. But the energy in NADH is used to convert the pyruvate molecule into another type of molecule. In animal cells, the molecule that's produced is a molecule that's called lactate. Okay. In plants, the molecule that's produced is a molecule that's called alcohol. All right. So in anaerobic respiration, what we find is that pyruvate, the two pyruvate molecules, are converted using the energy in NADH in human cells into a substance that's called lactate or lactic acid. Okay. Any of you ever heard of lactic acid before?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe some of you are in shape in here, but probably most of you don't look like you're in too good of shape today. All right. Let's say, just for fun, we all decided we were going to get in shape. Okay. And you've all done this before. So the very first thing you do when you decide you want to get in shape is you go out and you're able to run to like Manti. You know, and it's not that really all that bad. You know, just kind of jog over there. But your muscles start to stiffen up. Then the next morning, what happens to you? You can't even get out of bed, right? Okay. I mean, anytime you touch a muscle, it's just like so painful you think you're going to die. Okay. The reason that happens is because you're going anaerobic. Okay. Your lung capacity, because you're out of shape, is not very good. And so when you go out and you run, there's not enough oxygen to keep all of the cells in your body oxygenated. And so some of your cells start to go anaerobic. And what your body does is it says, this idiot's trying to kill me here. Okay. But I'm going to stay alive, and so it shunts all of the oxygen, or most of the oxygen in the body, to critical organs, like your brain and your heart. The least critical thing in your body is your muscles, right? And so what it does is it shunts the oxygen away from your muscle cells, and so muscle cells start to go anaerobic. And when they go anaerobic, they produce lactic acid. And when you get lactic acid buildup in your muscles, what it does is it freezes the ability of the muscles to actually contract or expand. Does that make sense to everybody? And so then you have this lactic acid build up in your muscle once you started trying to get in shape. After a few days, you can kind of work that lactic acid out of your muscle, but it takes quite a while to do that, right? Okay. So if you think about it, this kind of makes sense. What happens to you when you die, or anybody when they die? They go anaerobic, right? Okay. So what happens to the body? Yeah, it starts to go through anaerobic respiration, and we get something that we call a stiff, right? We go into rigor mortis. You guys know all about that, right? Seen it before. What's rigor mortis? It's the buildup of lactic acid in the muscles, essentially. Because your cells, even though your body's technically dead, they're still alive and they're going through anaerobic respiration for a while. Does that make sense? Now, that lactic acid will eventually break down. For example, if you find a dead body that's been dead for a couple of weeks, it's no longer in rigor mortis because that lactic acid has broken down and the cells, all the cells have completely died. Does that make sense to everybody? So that's why bodies go into rigor mortis when they die. I don't know if any of you knew that. Any questions? Now plants, they produce a different product. They don't produce lactic acid, they produce alcohol. Okay? And any of you that have tried to build your own home still knows that the only way you can get alcohol is if you have plant material in an anaerobic situation. Right? If you try and just leave plant material out on the cover top, it's not going to ferment. You need to put it in a place where there's no oxygen. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So it's probably good we as humans don't produce alcohol, or else you guys would be walking around with plastic bags on your face before you come to class, so that maybe you can be drunk before you come to class, right? Feel a little bit better about class. Okay. Any questions about anaerobic respiration? So with respiration, if it's anaerobic, basically all the processes shut down except for glycolysis, okay? And then different products are produced. There's still only two net ATP that are produced. Okay, that's all the energy that's produced. NADH that's produced is converted when pyruvate is either converted into lactate in animals or alcohol in plants. Questions. It's kind of interesting down at the prison, you know, they don't allow alcohol in the prison. One of the biggest crimes that they have in prison, since I've taught down there a little bit, they tell us that one of the biggest crimes they have down there is the inmates producing their own alcohol. What they'll do is they'll take any plant material, like potato pills or anything, and then they'll put them in a Ziploc baggie, which is an anaerobic situation, and that's how they produce their alcohol. Any questions about anaerobic respiration? Okay. All right, so let's just talk about the test again for a minute here. And then we'll probably let class out a little bit early today.